In today's gospel, we will listen to a story that is very familiar to all of us. We could probably almost all recite by heart the parable of the prodigal son. And we know that Jesus often taught in parables. Rather than delivering long, complicated treatises on God's law, he quite often used simple stories or images based on things that would have been familiar to his audience. Chester Dodd, in The Parables of the Kingdom, defines a parable as a metaphor or simile drawn from nature or common life, arresting the hearer by its vividness or strangeness, and leaving the mind in sufficient doubt about its precise application to tease it into active thought. And as that definition suggests, we're meant to grapple with parables and to understand that Jesus' parables often have multiple meanings, a surface meaning that would have been immediately apparent to anyone familiar with his subject matter, and a deeper meaning that provides important and difficult lessons to us. And I say difficult because we need to be sensitive to the fact that parables are intended to challenge us. Like so much of what Jesus taught, his parables are intended to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. And that means we need to really mull over them, ponder them. And that need to dig deep is no less true in this parable than in so many of Jesus' other parables. The first level, the easy, comfortable message of this story of the prodigal son derives from the fact that it's the last of three parables in the 15th chapter of Luke where someone's searching out that which has been lost. And in that sense, it presents to us such a beautiful image of God, right? I mean, who doesn't love the image of the Father welcoming his profligate son home? And when I sit with that passage, I can see the Father standing out at the edge of his property day after day, waiting and hoping for the son's return, and can experience the joy of the Father when he finally catches sight of the son coming home. And he can hardly contain himself from rushing to embrace the son, even before the son has made any expression of remorse. And so at that level, the story reminds us of God's continual welcome of us, of God's extraordinary compassion and mercy, waiting always to welcome us with open arms. And so far, so good. I mean, I think that's a very important lesson from this parable. It's one that brings comfort to a lot of people. It certainly brought comfort to me in times when I was struggling with God's love. But if we stop there, where's the challenge in the parable? Jesus' audience certainly was familiar with the Hebrew Scriptures. They certainly had any number of passages reminding them of how much God loved them. And so they didn't need this elaborate story only to help them know that God loved them. And so I think we need to dig deeper and say, what else is there in the parable for us? And let me just suggest a couple places you might explore in your prayer by considering the different characters in this story, starting with the older son. Because at some level, who doesn't at least have some sympathy for this older brother? Particularly those of us who are eldest children in our family, the ones who feel like we always do all the work, that we're never sufficiently appreciated for everything we do. And James Martin talks about this. He talks about the son's complaint about doing all the work and never even getting a goat to have with his friends. And Martin writes this: in one explosive sentence, the son vents the feelings of all those who have ever felt ignored or underappreciated for their hard work. In my experience, most Christians are trying to lead good lives and therefore are more like the dutiful elder son than the wastrel younger one. We're more likely to feel the older son's emotion, resentment over not being appreciated, jealousy over the success of someone who does not deserve it, anger at what we deem as favoritism, and sadness at being excluded. I was at a retreat last summer that Ron Rollheiser gave, and Rollheiser's claim is that resentment is one of the most common sins of good people. We don't always express our feelings as explosively as the older brother did, but we know that there are times that we at least secretly harbor some resentment when we feel we're not treated as we should be, when we feel like someone else got some reward that we think we deserve. Even Henri Nouwen, in his book, The Return of the Prodigal Son, admitted, "Often I catch myself complaining about little rejections, little impoliteness, little negligence. Time and time again, I discover within me that murmuring, whining, grumbling, lamenting, and griping that go on and on, even against my will." And so I think it's worthwhile for us to examine ways that we resonate with that older son's point of view. And I encourage that, you know, I suggested this in the Rollheiser comment, but St. Ignatius would tell us also that those of us trying to lead good lives, the temptations we face are very subtle, and resentment is one of those things that can subtly enter in and that can color how we act, how we think, and it can certainly lead us away from love. What about the father? I mean, our tendency when we read the father as a stand-in for God is to focus simply on his behavior toward the younger son. But you have to ask yourself, what about the older son? Did the father notice the older son? Did he notice him for all the years that he worked? Did he give him encouragement? Did he tell him what a good job he was doing? Did he notice him when he decided to throw the party? You know, you're not going to hear when the father tells the servants to go and kill the fatted calf. He doesn't say to anyone, go get my older son out in the field, tell him it's time to stop working and come to the party. Right? It's not until the older son doesn't come in that the father even seems to notice him. You know, and it raises the question of whether we at times behave like that. Are there people we take for granted? People whose efforts on our behalf we don't sufficiently appreciate. Or maybe we appreciate them internally, but we don't think to tell them how grateful we are for their efforts. Gratitude is such a central spiritual practice, and I think we're invited to see where we take people for granted. About the younger son, I only say this. I mean, the parable tells us he came to his senses, but I have to wonder, did he really come to his senses, or was he just hungry? Amy Jo Levine, in her book, The Short Stories of Jesus, says that Jesus' first century listeners would have heard not contrition but connivance in the younger son. What difference does that make in how we think about him? Maybe contrition takes a little longer sometimes, and we don't always appreciate that. Maybe it starts with small steps. And I end with just this thought. You know, what happens after the parable ends? And we often get these little vignettes. You know, does the elder son accept his father's response and come into the party? Does the father afterwards show greater appreciation for the son, elder son? But does the younger son really repent and learn from his mistakes? Does he know how fortunate he is? You know? And I'd invite you, as St. Ignatius says, St. Ignatius invites us to always put ourselves in these gospel passages and use our imagination to allow them to unfold. So maybe put yourself there and allow the story to continue and see what it is that God might want to reveal to you in it.